Today's session on the spirituality of work is looking at how do these ideas apply to me. Can I first get a show of hands of how many people were not here yesterday? So, okay. What we did a lot yesterday was try and define a bit spirituality and work, so I kind of summarized that up here for us. And as yesterday, we're going to begin with a litany of work. And I realized that we don't really need to have the copies in our hands since our response is just, we praise you, God. So let's begin with that and then take a look at how these ideas apply to us.
We give thanks, O God, for the work of our lives.
We praise you, God.
For the work of our hands.
We praise you, God.
For the work of our minds.
We praise you, God.
For the work of our hearts.
We praise you, God.
For the enlightening work of teachers, librarians, students, and coaches.
We praise you, God.
For the healing work of doctors, nurses, and counselors.
We praise you, God.
For the creative work of artists, musicians, painters, and sculptors.
We praise you, God.
For the precise work of engineers, scientists, and computer specialists.
We praise you, God.
For the nurturing work of homemakers, parents, and guardians.
We praise you, God.
For the wise work of retirees and grandparents.
We praise you, God.
For the proclaiming work of writers, photographers, editors, and publishers.
We praise you, God.
For the trustworthy work of accountants, bankers, lawyers, politicians, and salespeople.
We praise you, God.
For the faith-filled work of ordained religious and lay ministers.
We praise you, God.
For the protective work of police, firefighters, and military personnel.
We praise you, God.
For the dedicated work of secretaries, receptionists, and bookkeepers.
We praise you, God.
For the compassionate work of volunteers.
We praise you, God.
For the judicious work of managers, administrators, directors, and supervisors.
We praise you, God.
For the fruitful work of farmers, fishers, growers, and gardeners.
We praise you, God.
For the steadfast work of those who manufacture products.
We praise you, God.
For the constructive work of builders, surveyors, architects, masons, and carpenters.
We praise you, God.
For the efficient work of those who transport people and things by bus, train, plane, taxi, truck, and boat.
We praise you, God.
For the hospitable work of cooks, waiters and waitresses, cashiers, hotel and motel workers.
We praise you, God.
For the clarifying work of television, radio, and news media workers.
We praise you, God.
For the dependable work of telephone and postal workers.
We praise you, God.
For the good work of all other workers.
We praise you, God.
For our work which sheds light on the darkness.
We praise you, God.
For our work which creates order from chaos.
We praise you, God.
For our work which builds peace out of hostility.
We praise you, God.
For our work which helps others.
We praise you, God.
For our work which serves others.
We praise you, God.
For our work which empowers others.
We praise you, God.
For our work which inspires others.
We praise you, God.
For our work which builds your kingdom.
We praise you, God.
Thank you. As I mentioned yesterday, I do have copies of this litany of work that I'd like to hang on to for the most part until the end of the week, so we make sure that we've got enough copies. But if you won't be here another time and would like a copy, please do let me know. My hope for you, and I forgot to say this yesterday, those of you who were here yesterday, is that this may be a week of increasing your awareness and consciousness of all the ways that your spirituality is at work in the various kinds of ways that work is a part of your life. But also, I'd encourage you to just think about all the ways that work is happening in the village, I was very aware yesterday,
I don't know if anybody remembers, but I had a t-shirt that was embroidered in Guatemala, and I was thinking of people who had done that work. And for me, it's just been a process as I've been thinking about this of just being aware of all the ways that work is happening in our lives and all the ways that spirituality can help enhance the awareness of what's happening in that work. We talked about yesterday what do we mean by spirituality and what do we mean by work, and I wanted to share with you a quote. This is in the introduction to this book on working by Studs Terkel, that's in the bookstore, as well as Of Human Hands, that I'll be using a little bit later, as I mentioned yesterday. President of the United Packing House Workers of America, he said, "Learning is work, caring for children is work, community action is work. Once we accept the concept of work as something meaningful, not just as the source of a buck, you don't have to worry about finding enough jobs. There's no excuse for mules anymore. Society does not need them. There's no question about our ability to feed and clothe and house everybody. The problem is going to come in finding enough ways for man," he's not being very inclusive here, "for people to keep occupied so that they're in touch with reality. Our imaginations have obviously not yet been challenged," which I think is a very interesting comment. "It isn't the average working guy is dumb. He's tired, that's all." I think that last comment was from a steel worker. Today, what we want to do is say, okay, now how does this specifically apply to me, so that then my awareness can grow from there. And before I put us to work, I hope most of you brought something to write with. I've got a couple pencils left, but we'll do some sharing. I want to put you to work on a kind of a diagram that will be yours to keep, and you don't need to share it with anyone else. I mentioned yesterday Pope John Paul II's encyclical letter on Of Human Work, but also in an economic pastoral that the U.S. Catholic bishops put out in 1986, they had this to say about work. "The road to holiness for most of us lies in our secular vocations. We need a spirituality that calls forth and supports lay initiative and witness, not just in our churches, but also in business, in the labor movement, in the professions, in education, and in public life. Our faith is not just a weekend obligation, a mystery to be celebrated around the altar on Sunday. It is a pervasive reality to be practiced every day in homes, offices, factories, schools, and businesses across our land. We cannot separate what we believe from how we act in the marketplace. Holiness is not limited to the sanctuary or to moments of private prayer. It is a call to direct our whole heart and life toward God and according to God's plan for the world. Holiness is achieved in the midst of the world, in family, in community, in friendships, and in work." And my sense is, from the comments of folks yesterday especially, we know that. We know that in our heads and in ways in our hearts. But I don't know about you, but I know that I need to continue to really put that together for myself, to really begin to operate that way. If I do believe, as I do, that spirituality is not restricted to sacred times or places, but that everything is sacred, it has a lot of implications as far as how that takes shape. So I'd like us to make that specific in terms of our own lives. And to that end, I'd like you to work on a diagram here in this middle space to put your own name, and around it in the circle to put some of the main qualities that you see in yourself. And sometimes it's hard to put those qualities. You may need to think about what others tell you about yourself or would observe about you. And then these eight arrows are, I mean, this looks kind of a Native American design, but the eight arrows are main directions in which work, again, not just paid, takes place in your life. And then you may want to, after you put down things like, let me give an example from Of Human Hands. At one point, let's see, this guy is a practicing engineer, but he talks about, he says, I love to surprise people at the large university with my strong interests in music, art, history, and theology, and so on. He says, 11 years later, I find many more images that motivate and to some extent describe me. Engineer, pilot, pianist, tennis player, boyfriend, and believer. And then he goes on to talk a little bit about each one of those. So what I'd encourage you to do is take a look at, where are these energies and these qualities in me? Where do those go forth in the world around me? How are those taking shape? Or perhaps how have they taken shape? We talked about yesterday, folks, having already faced or facing retirement, and so that means that some of these are shifting. But I just ask you, either on the line or at the end of the year, however you want to do it, to just name some of the ways that that work is a part of your lives and kind of take a look at that process. So we'll stop the tape for a few minutes to give you some time to do this. Again, if you didn't bring something to write with, I've got a couple of pencils here. And then afterward, I'd like to ask us to reflect on that. I'm not going to ask you to share anything that's on the paper necessarily, but just reflect about it. Who needs a pencil? There's books over here. Just write some if you like.
Does anybody else need a book to?
Okay, so in the circle I'm going to put Kathy, and around it I may put precise, or I may put creative, or I may put friendly, or qualities about yourself, gifts that you experience in yourself or that others have named about you. Then out here I'm going to probably put wife, mother, teacher, speaker, friend, those kinds of ways in which those energies take shape in our world. The ways in which our productive daily activities that help bring about the reign of God. And maybe you've got more than eight, I hope you do. Anybody else with questions on that? I have down in my notes here, and I didn't say, besides the qualities and gifts in the middle, another thing you might want to have included, I found myself with far more than eight, I don't know if you did, when it came to like hobbies and relationships, I put sister and daughter as well as wife in and so on. Question first, where is God in this diagram? Yeah, and that's the awareness that we're trying to really enhance, is God is at work in this whole process. I found myself putting my positive qualities above and my negative ones down here. I don't know how much work you've done on that process, but a lot of the positive ones are the mirror image of the negative ones. So the perfectionist in me is also a good detail person. The social and open and friendly person in me is also the person who can get lost in doing and being for others and not tending to myself enough. So those can be connected there. Where for you are the holiest and most life-giving places? You might want to circle it, or maybe there isn't a holiest, most life-giving place.
It depends, too, on certain times. Yeah, it's just not all...
Right.
It's kind of like any of those roles can be both sides of
them. It's like somebody said yesterday, the best job has also been the worst job on certain days, that sort of thing, right? Any other things that struck you as you were filling this out? Want to share?
Well, one of the things is my roles are shifting. My role as a father is decreasing because my children are grown and gone. My role as a grandfather is expanding. My role as an engineer is decreasing because I retired from that, but my role as a teacher is remaining constantly. My shift from work to church and other places. So these, the emphases shift.
That's great. And I think that for many of us, the shifts may not be as dramatic as you're describing, but I think there is, in most of us, some amount of shift happening as we grow and change because we're, you know, we're growing and developing people. And the relationships around us, one of the questions I wanted to ask is the picture more individual or more relational as you see it? Yours, your diagram. Is it more about me or about the
relational?
Relational? I think for most of us it would be. I have a theory about that. I talk about this a lot when I talk about marriage and family spirituality. I see myself as what I call a web of relationships. I'm going to pop this on now. Anybody who's seen any of our three boys may not know who they are connected to me, would know that they don't look like these fresh-faced young boys in this picture. This is a long time ago, but it's the only picture of our family the size I have. You know, when we go to meetings, we wear a lot of name tags and so on, but I think we wear an invisible one of these around with us. I really was not being intentional yesterday when I talked about, what was it, my brother and my sister and my father. I didn't talk about Mitch and the boys so much, but we are, it seems to me, a web of relationships. And whether we're talking about our family of origin or family now or if I'm a single person, the people who are close to me, those folks in my life, and I'm going to relate this to work in just a second, so... have made a unique impact on who I am. Without any one of them, I would not be who I am. I like to say it's not just because I have three teenage boys and know who Smashing Pumpkins are, God forbid, but you know, other ways in which my life is different because of each of those people. And I make a unique impact in their lives. And so I like to talk about each of us as a web of relationships. Now, what does this have to do with work, and what does this have to do with our spirituality? Well, I think it is in here, especially in my family and circle of friends, that I know or do not know and able to name God. That is, God as love, as trust, as forgiveness, hope, and so on. Okay, so we'll do that. If I have not had any of those experiences in my life, in my relationships with others, I don't think I can make sense of religious language. And I've based that on a couple of people who I've known in my life. I don't know about your experience. One guy I met when I was in a seminary setting after college, and he'd been raised in a very institutional orphanage and had never, as we would say, bonded with anyone individually. He was still trying to figure out if for him there was a God, if he believed in God, because it was hard for him out of his own human experience to make sense of religious language. So how does this web of relationships affect us in terms of work, and again, work defined rather broadly? Very few jobs are totally isolated and individual. So. Some of the things that I heard yesterday as we were talking about what's the best job, the worst job, and so on, have to do with how do those relationships happen?
how are we creating or not one another? I don't know about you, but some of my worst job situations were when I was not adequately appreciated or really cherished is the word I was looking for. So those things can create us, or I'm making up words here, decreate us, destroy us. But so I think the relational element is very much a reality when we look at our work lives as well as at our family and relational lives in other ways. So is there a clear connection in your diagram between the doing represented in that outer circle and the being, the things that you named about yourself early, closer to the center of your diagram? Do they flow one from another? Or perhaps is there a sense of, wait a minute, the qualities I name in that inner circle don't seem to be reflected all that well in the outer one? Which we come to at points in our lives and need to say, wait a minute, it's time for a shift here. Someone yesterday was saying,
isn't the stuff that's in the middle, isn't it the way in which you do or carry out the stuff that's on the outside?
Right.
Diane could have the same stuff all around the outside,
right?
But what's in the middle could be different and therefore drive everything down.
Sure. So how that took shape in her life would be different, right? I agree. But I think also at times we hit a point where the ways that I'm trying to use my energy out there don't seem to fit this me that I'm experiencing myself to be becoming and changing. Yes? No? Yeah.
That's where conflict though occurs with your job space.
Yes.
When you don't feel fulfilled because you're not doing that, you know.
Yes.
We all know who we are because of how we're related to somebody. I know how I am as a father. I know, well, I have a concept because I had a father. I know that how to act sort of like a father because I have kids, okay? But then, like, when people lose their children in an accident or something like this, there's a huge crisis there because now who am I? Then it becomes a question of essence then, huh?
Yeah.
You don't know how to act anymore.
Exactly.
And then when we, in dealing with individuals, we ask the question, who are you? I'm a child adolescent psychiatrist, right? So you ask the question, well, who are you? Well, nobody's ever asked him that question in that kind of context.
Yeah.
And so we all know ourselves only because of the roles that we play. And yet some of the journey is, I think, who are we with God? You know, who are we
again?
And without other things, maybe.
Right, which we have three adolescent boys at our house, and so I find them, you know, stumbling to ask those who am I and who is God for me?
That's right.
Questions in very, at times, awkward ways. And then as you were talking too, I was thinking about the parenting role. You know, it's hard for me at this point. I find it's sometimes even harder for my husband because I think the expectations are there. Mm-hmm. You were saying, I think I know how to be a father.
Yeah.
You know, what we expect and what we end up with at times.
They're now trying to define you in a different kind of way, and they'll come at you in a different kind of way. And for us to maintain our consistency then becomes difficult because they're going to many traditions.
Yes. Well, and I think you can extend that parallel to jump in if anybody else wants to hear too, to other situations where you know, I have just been named as the manager in the office, and so I've been in that office before, but now people expect of me something different than I was before. Do I decide to be that or do that, or how am I going to cope with what I see myself to be and what others experience and expect of me?
But were you not named as manager because of certain qualities that you seem to have? And so, do you really want to change as a manager? Do you want to remain the same? And, you know, what? And then the expectation is that you will change in some way, but then that destroys what it was that got you there to begin with. So it becomes very
difficult.
where is the role and where am I in that? And as you were talking, there was something. Oh, the other thing that I think is constantly at work in most of the things that I put down, and we get talking about it a little bit after the session yesterday, is when we talk about the intersection of spirituality and work, where do I, where does my pushing my energies to do the best that I can as I know it in the situation, where do I do that? And then where do I let go and say, as a teacher, as a parent, as a coworker, I've done all I can in this situation, Lord, it's in your hands. You know, I think that's a very, I find it's very difficult for me, let me speak for myself, as somewhat of a controlling and perfectionistic person at times, to not want to make it okay, and knowing at times I just have to let go and let God take over in that situation, whether it's praying for a student or whatever.
Well, it's interesting you talked about when we put the things in a circle, to put in things that not only what we think, but what others have reflected to us. That is important. We have a situation in our congregation right now where we have a pastor that if we and he listed the characteristics in the circle, they may be the same. Bookish, studious, caring. But in terms of the roles he is called to as leader of our parish, leadership, preaching, teaching, caring, and so forth are all on the outside. And it turns out that those who have experienced him say that his strengths are in the caring, the one-on-one when you're in trouble, that kind of thing. But his view is his strengths are in preaching and teaching, and there's a little mismatch and it's causing it causes difficulty. And so you have to listen to what people reflect as well as
yes.
what you feel.
Very, very much the case. And that lack of clarity between the two is, in my experience, in any job situation
yeah.
where the conflict happens.
And this thing on being appointed a manager, there are many managers who get appointed where both they and the people who appointed them discover that they were both mistaken.
Yes.
I mean, it's
yes. The gifts that I thought I had or they thought I had are not the gifts that, in fact, I experience or we experience as we go on.
I yes. worked in a government bureaucracy, the Soil Conservation Service, United States Department of Agriculture for years, and I'm a technician, so I've never been a boss, but I've noticed that when people, young people come in and are being trained, too often the supervisors in the past, anyway, we're going to be too nice to the people. We're not going to tell them, hey, maybe you have a problem, and then about 10 years later, they're a problem to themselves and a problem to everybody else.
Yeah.
So we have to learn to tell them in a nice way. And
yes.
maybe you're in the wrong position before they get too far in that their ego and everything is too bad or they can't afford to do something different.
Yeah.
It hurts everybody.
Yeah. To not give people clear and fair feedback is no favor to anybody, really. Yeah. Excellent. It seems to me that very related to what we have on this diagram is the responsibility that I see as key in our spirituality to be the presence of God in the unique places that we are put. So no one else but you is in the various places, the things you've named on here, that you are. And you are, or not, good news, the presence of God in those places. No one else can do it, can be it, in the same way that you can. So the question I find myself asking often is, am I being a faithful reflection of God's presence, God's love and caring in that situation? And at times, God's tough love, too, to be accurate and fair. And I think it's a question, really, that no one can answer for us.
You know, the paradox of that, however, is, okay, and you know, if you're thinking about the same kind of model, being mindful, as an individual who is in a workplace, once you become mindful of those that are outside of you rather than what's happening to you, then you exude God's presence,
yeah.
okay, and verify who they are, and yet the problematic issue is if you think too much introspectively about yourself, you can't see what's out there and you can't respond then to the needs or other individuals. And so you have to, it's a dance that you play all the time, mm-hmm. of introspective and being mindful of that which is out there.
Yes, right, very good.
Kind of translation of that is you have to, have to always remember to be a caregiver, but also you have to remember that the caregiver has to remember themselves sometimes too.
Yes, yes. Which I find to be, now I'd be very interested to see what you think of this, an especially strong challenge for women. Mm-hmm. Not that it is not a challenge for men, but I find living in a household with four males that they're pretty good about taking care of themselves and dealing with what they need. And I'm the one who's tending to everybody else and not to me. Does that fit your experience?
Yeah. But I think it's probably always been harder to be a woman, but even in this, especially in this day, it's probably harder to be a woman than to be a man. Okay, only because you come now, you have to be superwoman, you have to have a profession, you have to be a mother, you have to do all that other kind of stuff too. And so the challenges of emerging, I think, then cause even greater responsibility, and then you have to give up, you have to feel like you have to give up something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think though that I see both men and women dealing with some of those questions, am I a human doing or a human being sort of thing, and how do I really come up with a balance? Yesterday I was fascinated as we went around that the three men in a row said, you know, I'm far more than how I would identify myself in my job. And I think that's very true, but I think it's something that we're all kind of coping with. And how do I, in the course of a day, come to a place where I can have that mindfulness and really center and focus? I remember most of my work has been in religious settings, whether in a Catholic university or parish work or whatever, and you know, telling myself, okay, when I come in the door, I'm going to sit down at my desk and spend a moment in prayer before I do that. And this is something we'll talk about more on Friday. And I have, a religious image or two at my desk, which is, of course, especially appropriate in that setting. Sometimes it might be tougher in some work settings. But, how do we do that? How do we continue to try and keep our attention that way?
I wonder if some of this ability to care for self, though, might also be linked to personality types, because I remember interviewing a pastoral candidate for our congregation once who rather proudly said that his approach was he was either flat out or flat on his back, and to me that's not a very healthy way to approach life, but that he lived, he believed that, and they did that. But there are people who burn themselves out. I mean, caring for others, and I think pastors are especially susceptible to that.
Yes.
People in caring professions,
uh-huh.
where you... It's a person. Some of it is personality, I think.
I'm in the process of reading a book on stewardship, and one of the issues is that we allow others to have control of their own, of their own space or their own jobs or their own lives. And as mothers, I think it's very difficult to reach that balance of trying to give direction as well as then, if they choose not to accept direction, you have to also allow them their choices and work with them rather than trying to sort of force the issue. Mm-hmm. And it's not just in parenting, but in all aspects of our lives that then is an issue. And caregiving again, I'm here to take care of you and you will receive my care.
Whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
You will be cared for.
True.
Yeah. We also have often been raised with the idea of better to give than receive, which quite frequently will translate to, therefore it must be weak to receive.
Yes.
And it's very difficult to receive and to let go.
Uh-huh. So. Uh-huh. Yes.
I think the other thing, this standards, the expectations of society, whether you're a man or a woman, probably higher today. Especially employers are demanding more, fewer people doing more. I think the studies show that Americans are working harder today than they did say 10 years.
Yes.
So then it makes it harder to take care of yourself along with it, and the standards and the rung keeps getting higher and higher.
Right. And the hours expectations continue to escalate.
You know, I've never been able to figure this out. Back when I was in college, which was quite a few years ago, they were saying, oh, we're going to be having so much leisure time. You've got to prepare so you can take care of this leisure time you're going to get. Half century later, I'm still looking at it.
The work week was going to go to 35 hours. Somehow that's 50 or 60.
Well, they document that it's shrunk in the last 10 to 15 years even, and part of it is we spend our time repairing and insuring and so on our labor-saving devices.
Yes.
The computer that was supposed to save on paperwork just generates more paper. Right.
Yeah, the office was supposed to be paperless by now.
I want to share with you a couple of quotes from Martin Luther. I promised I would do this, that I think that might add to our conversation. Just look at your tools, at your needle or thimble, your beer barrel, your goods, your scales or yardstick or measure, fill in the blanks. All this is continually crying out to you, friend, use me in your relations with your neighbors just as you would want your neighbors to use their property and their relations to you. And another. Dear friends, the kingdom of God, and we are that kingdom, does not consist in talk or words, but in activity, in deeds, in works, and exercises. So what we've got then is a palette before us. The chance to use those colors, those gifts, and those outlets for activities. And I bet if we did this in a couple of years, many of our diagrams we'd get changed further. A chance to be about, as I mentioned before, uniquely building the kingdom. I am the face of God. How am I helping to shape my world so that my gifts are shared as fully as I can? And I think it's a question that can lay heavy on our shoulders, but I think it's something that is also a delightful invitation to really, again, to use that image of the palette to play at being the delightful face of God. I think that's the privilege that we're given. Another question related here. Who do you know, and this is a kind of a change from what I asked you yesterday, who do you know that especially connects their spirituality and work well? And what is it about them that is striking?
We all see one here. I think of Martin Wells.
That's
walking around here in his jeans and his baseball cap, keeping the system going. And then seeing the purpose for keeping the system going. There are others, of course, but that was an immediate.
And so what's striking is that it's
really an integrated for him.
Fit.
It's so integrated.
And something that he enjoys doing?
Seems to.
I'm sure there are good days and bad days.
Sure.
The best of days and the worst of days.
Right. If you'd heard him preach on Sunday, you'd wonder.
Yeah.
Anybody else that comes to mind?
I was thinking of the lady that was directing the music. your name now.
Yes,
Mary Price.
Yeah.
It always brings a lump to my throat to say it, but it's my father.
Wow.
Who is a farmer who realized, you know, how much he depended on God.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was all one piece.
Creation and rain and all that.
Yeah. And what a tremendous model he was of that for you.
For me, it was my mother. She just is deeply moved by faith and has been fortunate to have a small family business that she has the freedom to do what she wants to do.
I have a friend at work, a guy named Rick, who's a super technician. He knows more about some equipment than anybody will ever know. But he's rolled this into a plan for retirement where there's a Catholic camp that he knows when the director is retiring and is working through his current responsibility and also preparing himself for his next vocation in 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
And but I don't think he sees a difference between the two, you know. For uh-huh. Rick, I think repairing a machine is as holy as directing a camp.
Yeah. Wow.
Hopefully, I think there's a trend to stop separating things like, you know, where work and, you know, what we talk about, body and soul and mind and all those kinds of things are all separated in a Western kind of thought. But hopefully we can just move all that together and just make them a big mush, you know. And I mean, and it's very hard for the Western mind to mush them all up because then you can't tell exactly what it is. But hope, but that's what we are, one big mush, you know. And so we then I think we can then not separate all that kind of stuff and we compartmentalize ourselves and deal with that kind of stuff.
Well, and we were saying yesterday, it's there in the Gospels. Jesus was known, and we'll talk more about this tomorrow, was known as, you know, for his workmanship, for his, isn't this the carpenter's son? And, you know, and he uses a lot of examples from work environments of various sorts. And so it's there that integration is there in Jesus. It's more a cultural thing where we pull that apart and not mush things together.
Along that same line, though, is body and soul and so forth. Also, the idea of work and play, occupation, avocation, and so forth. It should just be living life. It shouldn't be a dividing line. The only difference is that maybe you get paid for some of it, but that should not define it. It should be your life, your living, and that would cover it, I think.
If we put it in the context of call, that if we're doing what we're doing because we're called to do it, then it gives you a different kind of context of how you understand it.
Yeah.
That it really is. And if you can think about whatever you do as a call, then it becomes a little more integrated, I think.
Yeah. This is also related. I know I keep mentioning other days, but we'll talk about some of this on Thursday. But, you know, it's easier to do that, I think, with some jobs than with others. You know, I think about your comment about your father as farmer. We've shifted our work situations. Several people yesterday, when they talked about their worst job, talked about, you know, assembly line type situations. I have a sister who has just finished going back to school to retool for some computer related work, but for most of her adult life has worked as an information operator for the telephone company, and she's a very people-oriented person and was very helpful at what she did. But I saw when I went to her job site more than once how very alienating that kind of a job is. You know, anymore you sit there and you're the human end of a computer terminal when you're information operator, and it's a pleasant room, But also, that's all you do, and the goal is to get that answer down as short as possible so that, you know, you're as efficient as possible, and, you know, and even more, I think, some assembly line kinds of jobs. When we think about those are only, you know, a century or at most too old, and before that time, the work, again, we're talking paid employment, but I think that's related to a lot of elements of our lives and our work as a whole. Our work conditions were not in our, before that, our work conditions were much more under our control. Not that it wasn't difficult at times if it was a bad year in the crops field or whatever, but it was not a matter of, you know, these inhuman hours and working for the boss long. And hours. So I think that's related to the issues of how do I really see it as a calling vocation. With the Industrial Revolution, it becomes tougher.
As an active layperson in our parish, though, I don't see that there is any movement toward better integration of work and spiritual life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the pressures, I'm active in worship, and the pressures to keep worship short, not to change anything, to keep it in its place is just tremendous. I mean, somebody's trying to squish out into other places and other parts of the week is impossible.
Yeah. If you get a chance in this Of Human Hands, just on that topic for a sec, the last chapter, They Bring Their Work to Church, is a really good example of a church that's done an excellent job of dealing with that, of having the engineers sit down together and have a conversation about what that kind of work is and how they can bring their faith to it, and then celebrating on a Sunday, and they have some sample prayers in here. They have prayers for builders and contractors, mechanics, bookkeepers, seamstresses, and tailors, that sort of thing, and just really connect those two. And they talk about how enlivening it was for folks in that congregation to feel like we're not invisible, but there's something going on. Yes, you know.
Just bouncing off what you said, I've had the unique opportunity of being invited as a pastor into leading a hospital personnel in a spiritual understanding of the work. Mm-hmm. And it's not my parishioners now. It's going to the workplace and actually teaching in the workplace spirituality of work and in relational things that relate to that. The hospital recognizes it. We've been through about 300 to 400 people so far. I've got a couple hundred to go yet.
That's great.
The most hospitals are laying off their chaplains and getting less of
that care. But then the reason they want to do it is because this used to be a sister's operation, or Sisters of St. Francis of Assisi. And suddenly discovered that, what's happened is, it's just a hospital like any other hospital, except there's the sisters that control just a very little bit of it. Mm-hmm. So they want to put back in their original reason for being a Catholic hospital. Mm-hmm. And they're looking for the spirituality in the work.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My parents are very involved. My dad's been on board of the Catholic Hospital in Spokane, and they do a lot of work on that sense of mission, because it is the reason that the institution exists, but like you say, it's drifted away from that in some ways.
We call it mission integration.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was director of a facility at one time, and every new person in housekeeping I would have in my office within a week to tell them how important their job was. My secretary finally told me, don't do that, because every time they come up, after the first week, when you go to the director's office, it scares a living daylight. So what I did is I went down to there. And I always thought it was a great idea, because when I was in the ranks, I never got into the director's. I thought it was wonderful. So I would invite these people, guys, you're just doing a great job. You realize how important the housekeeping is. We can't, if we don't keep the hospital clean, we can't cure patients. They're all having diarrhea.
Well, I think that would help you see your job, your role as a whole. And that's seems to me that's one of the problems with factory or anything like this, that you just do a little piece. If you don't see the whole and where your little piece fits in, you have a sense of worthlessness.
Yeah.
Or given some sort of confirmation that, yes, this is
important,
really
yes.
important validation. Yeah.
One further comment. As we worked together, they allowed me to create whatever I wanted to do with the people. And so what I do is talk a lot, I teach a lot about liturgy, because no matter where they go to church, that the sense of liturgy and flowing through the Sunday morning service flows into your work. And I always think that's a good instrument for us to because then it's not just hearing it from me, but every Sunday you can go back and be fed again.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And are most of the people you work with regular churchgoers or no?
Don't ask. We address it initially by saying we don't care if you go to church or not. Some are Pentecostal, some are Roman Catholic, a lot of them, some Lutherans, some fundamentalists, some Baptists, some, I said the rhythm we teach is a rhythm that's integral to the person.
Yes.
Whether you worship or not, it's part of who you are. Mm-hmm. And you need it.
Is it mandatory that they come to?
Mandatory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, the distinction that I drew yesterday between spirituality and religion, I was talking with one person afterward, and we were talking about how many people are shifting to a notion of spirituality and pulling away at times from their religious roots. But the difficulty that we both acknowledged in that is that it can tend to become rather individualistic then. And there isn't that sense of community, which I experience in various churches to be more fragile, and in a way I mean that, in a way I don't, but because of the sense of some more acknowledged diversity perhaps than in the past. And so it's harder for us to say, yes, though we may be in a spectrum of where we stand on certain things, we're all Lutheran, we're all Catholic here together. But I think for all the individualism that we have in our culture, we yearn for that sense of community as we do here at Holden. And so how do we come to a place where we can really share that spirituality with some kind of sense of meaning and common symbols? And it sounds like you're really helping people to articulate some of that in their workplace. That need to feel like I'm a part of something bigger than myself.
Kathy, have you seen some positive examples in secular organizations where people have opened up this kind of question? One of the things I started in a new organization just 4 months ago, and I just asked people, why do you work here? There are 12 people that work in the organization. And it was amazing how many people talked about God.
Wow.
And about spirituality.
Uh-huh.
I'm just wondering if you've seen experiences with people in government agencies or other things where there's a kind of an openness to it.
I haven't, because as I said yesterday, I don't feel like an expert at all in this area. I mean, I wish I knew more about that sort of thing, but I really don't. But I think the question of why do you work here would be a fascinating one to ask in almost any work setting. But I don't know how much that's been done.
It's interesting that the management books are becoming very much located in Christian thought. From my perspective, books like stewardship, Peter Block has a book on stewardship. He calls it stewardship. He doesn't come across in the Christian kind of sense. There's a Margaret Wheatley, she talks about leadership and new science, and she talks about chaos theory and coming together and working, and all things work together for good eventually. We can't see it because we're in the middle of the chaos, but when we look back, we can see the organization and other kinds of things. Very, from my perspective, very Christian thought. And it is there, my prejudice is, oh, they're finally coming around. they finally got it, or I finally got it, or what, So, but I see that in some way. Maybe I'm looking for it, maybe I see it, but.
No, I think that's true in a lot of business situations from the little I'm aware of. What I find intriguing is I don't know that the church is using it that much.
No, they're not. They're way behind.
Only last.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't even know what's happening. Yeah.
Any last comments we need to kind of wind up here? Well, thank you very much for a great conversation. I really appreciate it. I hope this was some help to you as a thought of how this takes shape in your own unique life at this point. Tomorrow we're going to look at attitudes toward work and spirituality in scripture and history. And on Thursday, look at challenges and temptations. Where do I experience evil or the temptation toward evil in the workplace? And Friday, we're going to try and put it all together and get a sense of vision of where do we go from here.